Today is Wednesday, March 20th, 1974. This is Moss Amper, and I'm continuing my interview with Marcella Goldberg, Executive Director of the Pittsburgh Blind Association. We were talking when last I spoke with you about some of the satisfactions you had at work. You told me the story of a very handicapped boy who came in on this bad, drizzly day and was so happy about being at work. Mm-hmm. And how experiences like this were so satisfying to you. And this was your explanation for being able to be with an agency so long and cope with disappointments that you had. And I listened to that portion of the tape, and somewhat back, you had talked about coming home feeling many times very disturbed about the blind babies, and your husband always knew it when you walked into the door of what had happened. Now you told me about a good experience for you. Do you also share this type of happening with your husband?
Oh, of course. He can sense whether it's been, as most spouses do, whether it's been a good or bad day. And of course he knows. I don't share all the grief with him. Partly because he's a little more emotional than I am. This bothers him too. But when he can tell, then I, from my reaction, then I sometimes tell him.
You married at a point in time when women's magazines were running stories about will you have marriage or a career, and apparently you decided to have both. Now, can you tell me a little bit about this? How you met your husband and how you decided to continue professionally?
Well, I think we met in the usual way. I had never known him, but some of my older brothers knew him very well. Some of my older brothers knew him very well, and my folks had known him. He is a member of the Rosenblum family. My parents and his Rosenblum relatives shared common interests in the community. My mother was very active in the early days of Israel in Hadassah, way back when I was a youngster. And she and Saul Rosenblum, who was Eddie's uncle, were vitally concerned in the same kind of program. And my father and one of Ed's uncles grew up together and were very close friends from their childhood on. It was just one of those things. But the meeting didn't come through family at all. It came through a mutual friend who had introduced us.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And how old were you at the time you met?
I was in my early 30s. I think I was 33 when we were married.
So you were already established professionally.
And I was at home, living at home in our big family home with my mother, who was an invalid.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved in there,
mm-hmm,
and lived there with her until her death. And I continued to work and take care of the household.
I see. But there was never a question in your mind. You knew that you would keep on with your profession.
Yes.
And
we both knew this. Mm-hmm. We discussed this thoroughly. And I was going to continue working, and it went along with this.
You remarked that he was a sensitive person, and he also was very involved in the community, isn't he?
He isn't at this point. He was,
mm-hmm,
in former years. Right now he's ready for retirement, and he has not been well. But he was very active in the community. I think at one point he was secretary of the Jewish Federation. He participated in all the drives and all this kind of community and actively interested in Israel and Zionism.
What about your own involvement with the Jewish community?
Minimal. My activities practically consist of being a member of almost everything that goes around and no active participation.
Well, you almost don't have the time for
that,
really.
Right. That's right. It's a full-time job.
Right.
I don't live my job. We maintain a social life and other activities.
That's wonderful. You have a rounded existence, really.
Well, try to make it that way. It's not always easy.
You talk, I'm sure it isn't. Mm-hmm. I have worked at periods of my married life for 5 days a week, and I know it. The personal care and the home care requires a lot of juggling.
Well, this is a little more than 5 days a week. It goes evenings and it goes weekends and whatever the demands of the job are.
Yes,
and they're great.
I mean, they would be great. Mm-hmm. So then you haven't had the time, really, to be involved in the Jewish community. So it almost was not a choice. I didn't think about it. You mentioned that in your growing up years, your mother was quite involved. She was president of every Jewish women's organization.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about your father? This is the other important man in every woman's life. Tell me a little bit about him.
My father also was involved in the community activities. It's a little more difficult for me to remember this and to put my finger on it because my father was a great deal older than my mother. And he was well up in years during the years I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that he too was very active in particularly the Zionist movement, the Jewish Home for the Aged. I can't really put my finger on other things.
But he was interested.
Yes.
Would you say that your upbringing was the typical Jewish family upbringing of that period?
Yes, I would say so.
Were your parents Orthodox?
My parents were Orthodox. But they gave us the choice of which way we wanted to go, as far as Orthodox versus Reform Judaism. And although as a small child I went to the Hebrew Institute and learned Hebrew, I went through a Rosh Hashanah Sunday school situation and was confirmed from there. My younger brother took far more Hebrew than any of the rest of us, which is interesting, and was very fluent in speaking Hebrew. Probably still can if he pinned himself down. He was the only one of us, I think, with the exception of my oldest brother, who did not go through a reformed Jewish education.
This was his choice?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We were all allowed our own choice, which is very interesting.
Yes, for that period, I think it certainly was interesting.
We all went to temple services for the high holidays for the first day, and then went with our parents to the second day services in the conservative synagogue.
Are your parents living?
No.
Neither one of them. And when did they die? What point in life?
My father died in the 30s, and my mother died in the middle 40s.
You said he was much older than she?
Yes. I think I figured the other day my mother would be 97 at this point, and my father well over probably 110.
Is that right?
They were living.
Yes. You really have been then with the agency, Pittsburgh Bond Association, how long?
Since 1935.
1935.
And so prior to that, I worked at the School of Medicine Paul Clinic in the social service department.
So you probably have seen a great many changes in community structure.
Over the years,
yes.
Yeah.
Now, this is kind of a big topic, but when you first became associated with the Pittsburgh Blind Association, how did it fit in to the structure of social agencies in the community? You now are community funded.
Yes, we were then too.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little difficult to pinpoint for you quickly,
mm-hmm.
but when I went into the agency as a medical social worker for a prevention of blindness program, this was unheard of. A medical social worker worked within the realms of a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And to go into a community agency, nobody could quite figure out what I was going to do and how I could coordinate the teaching I had had with the job that I had had, that I was going into. Within a hospital, you do social service work with the patients in the hospital. In those days, you worked only with the outpatient department patients.
Mm-hmm.
Duplicated word. No social service department worked with a private patient, for instance. Private patients didn't need casework help, quotes and unquotes. When I went into a community agency, which the association was, we were concerned with working with people regardless of their financial status. Blindness, you know, has no respect for social status or economic status or ethnic or cultural or any other label you can put on to people. And to have a program that people who were not in financial need would accept because they needed help was a difficult one to get across. Because relationships, my relationships, were awfully good with the ophthalmologists in the community, referrals came from that source. And they would have a private patient, let's say, who had a severe eye problem, who needed help. And they would say, well, you can get help at the Association for the Blind. And the person would say, oh, I couldn't go to a social agency. This is not where I need help or would accept it. And they would say, well, now you just go over and see Marcella Goldberg, and you will find that although she's a social worker, it's not with the same label. She'll be able to help you. Your problem's different.
Mm-hmm.
This was a thing that had to be built up in the community.
Yeah.
And actually, I would say, a certain amount of it, the agency sold, I sold from the standpoint of need. A great bit of it was done by the who saw the need of their patients. You know, despite the criticism the general public gives of physicians, there are many of them who see their patients as whole people and recognize other needs. I remember when Dr. Blair, who was one of the founders of the agency with Mrs. Ruslander, used to say to me, a surgeon's lucky. His failures land in the cemetery. An ophthalmologist isn't so lucky. His failures come to him all the time without any vision, and there's nothing he can do for them. This is the role you have to play. Pick up and help them in the ways in which the physician cannot help.
And I saw this morning when I went through the association building, there were really living examples.
Yes. Yes. And they are the same as you and I. They're deprived of vision. Their humor is wonderful. They're sometimes, you know, my friends tell me I have a perverted sense of humor on account of them because we laugh about some of the things that happen. I can remember sitting in Howard Johnson restaurant. I had come back from Harrisburg with a whole carload of blind people.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a terrific migraine headache. I was the only one who could ride. We were sitting at Midway and had to get into Pittsburgh, and sensitively, they knew I wasn't feeling well because I was unusually quiet. So we sat down, went into the restaurant to have a cup of coffee, and they decided they were going to perk me up. And they started telling tales of their experiences, and we were all hysterical. Nobody left the surrounding tables because of these stories that they were telling of experiences they had, and they could laugh at them.
Would you give me one example?
Well, like the girl, one of the girls was a social worker, a trained social worker, totally blind girl, and she was telling the story of visiting a family in the South Side. And you know how the houses are on the hills of the South Side mm-hmm. of Pittsburgh. Sometimes you go in up the front steps, you go around the house to the back, and then you go downstairs into the kitchen. Well, she had gone to visit this family one day, and she went around the steps and up the top of the back steps and started on her way down into the kitchen when she stumbled and fell. And she rolled down the steps and kicked the door open as she came in, as she landed at the bottom. And so she didn't know if there was anybody in the room or not. So she sat up real sharply, pulled her skirt down, and said, not knowing whether anybody was there or not, "Hello, folks, this is your blind caseworker. I've just rolled in to see you."
Oh, my.
Well, of us were hysterical, you know, and we kept saying, "Did you get hurt?" She said, "That didn't matter. The point was I maintained my composure. I pulled my skirt down and I spoke."
What a gift.
Yes.
For anybody to be able to handle a situation like that with a blind.
Yeah.
Could have been devastating.
Yes, very. I don't remember the details. I don't remember whether there was anybody there or not. This is beside the point. The point was how beautifully she handled it.
Of course. But you mentioned something in passing, that you had a migraine headache.
No.
Are you troubled with this?
Well, we all have handicaps, you know.
Of course.
I happen to have a terrible food allergy that gives me migraine.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it periodically. I get caught. I know what I'm allergic to and I watch it. And all my friends know it.
When you get caught and you have a day like this, is the migraine headache of the nature where you have to stay home?
Yes. It just knocks me out.
Most people I know who have this trouble are forced to be away from work.
Mm-hmm. Usually a 2-day episode.
So then you just...
I bury my head and I don't want to see anybody or hear anything.
So this then is just something you live with.
Yes.
As you say, we all have to handicap.
That's right.
And it's something that's ongoing for you.
It's less as I get older.
That's what I understand.
In one way. In another, I'm much more knowledgeable about what's included in foods.
MSG is supposed to be a trigger, I understand, in Chinese foods. Do you agree with that?
I do not do well with Chinese foods.
Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be the reason for it.
I have no idea what it is, but I know that I'm not happy when I eat in a Chinese restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do well with kosher foods.
Mm-hmm.
I'm allergic to eggs.
Is
you know, good kosher food, everything is made with eggs.
Except
makes
food.
It good. Yeah. Of chicken soup, and well, sometimes it's got the egg yolk in.
Oh, people, that's
yeah,
right.
A little
people,
wood.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Some people
mm-hmm.
do. In fact, it's a delicacy.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. All right, so then this is something you've learned to live with, but you have had in your life, as everybody has had, periods of stress, periods of unhappiness. Now, how does this enter into your work on how you cope?
I try not to take my personal problems to work or my work problems home.
Are you able to function this well?
Yes, pretty well.
That's pretty well. For some people, of course, it's a way of throwing off personal problems.
Yeah. I've gone through many periods of terrific stress, but the job goes on, and life goes on. Perhaps I think without bragging. I have a lot of inner strength that I can count on and muster to help me through situations like this. Yes, about, see, it's 3 years ago, I lost two brothers within from January to April. We've had many illnesses in the family. When you're one of a large family, you know, joys are multiplied and sorrows are multiplied.
That's true. And it's also a person to do.
That's right. And you learn to live with it. You don't hide these things. I mean, all the people in the workshop have known when I've had problems. But this is a give and take because we're all human beings. If you notice, when we come into the shop, the talking switchboard operator calls me by my first name. I don't know whether you noticed that or not. As a matter of fact, he calls me Mar, which is a nickname. We all work together. Now, most of the younger blind people call me Mrs. G or Mrs. Goldberg because of the age differential, I think. Those who have been there a long time, who knew me when I was young and they were young, they all call me by my first name, and I have no feeling about this. And they know members of my family who come in. If I take somebody in my family through the workshop, I introduce them as a member of my family. And so they feel they know them. And they knew when I had nieces and nephews arrived on the scene, and they'll ask about them because as little children they came in to see the shop. So that it's, I'm not out on cloud 11, let alone cloud 9. We're all human beings together.
You mentioned the nieces and nephews. Now, I have an aunt who doesn't have children, and my brother and I are really her children. Now, do you relate in this way to some of your nieces and nephews, or to all of them?
The younger generation knows a little different. When they were little bitties, they were in and out of my home all the time, and there was a very close relationship. Now I would say it's a far more casual relationship than we had with our aunts and uncles when
That's
we were
true.
Children.
Very true.
But they all know that we're here, that I'm here, and very often when they are troubled or have problems, we will sit down at lunch and discuss it. And this is true not only of my own nieces and nephews, but of Ed's too.
What's the age range of your nieces and nephews?
How many
young people are we talking?
Well, there are three girls in the group, and they range in age from 21 to 35, I would say. And there are about five boys, and they range from 45 down to the youngest is probably 23. So that they're the generation that is different.
And actually, the older nieces and nephews would be closer to your age than they were to their parents' age. Is not so.
Yes, one of my brother's children.
Mm-hmm.
Of the seven of us, only three have children.
Oh. Everyone was married?
All but one. Four have children. I'm sorry, one of my brothers has an adopted son. But my sister has one child. One of my older brothers had two. My younger brother did the best. He had four. And then one brother with a new adopted child. There were three of us who had no children.
And of course he has the youngest children, too.
Yes.
And this would be a range.
Mm-hmm. It's quite a range.
Do you ever all get together?
Oh, yes. Yes, very frequently. There were not so many anymore. I've lost three brothers.
Mm-hmm. But I met with the nieces and nephews.
Yeah. Holidays, occasions.
So that you are in touch.
We're scattered.
Yes.
I have one nephew on the West Coast, and nephew in Iowa, and moving around.
It's a more mobile society for everyone. Yeah. Notice.
Oh, nice kids. We have two little ones. Oh, Harold, my brother, my younger brother, has two grandchildren. And one of my older brothers had four grandchildren.
And where are these? These are great nieces and nephews. And where are they living?
The four are in New York, and the two are in Iowa.
Mm.
They don't see them very often.
No, I guess not. Mm-hmm. Which is also a difference, a great difference in the family system today. The people spread everything. I, in looking over your resume, I was interested in reading about the awards and honors that you've received. The 1967 award given to you as one of the outstanding women in the Pittsburgh area. And what paper?
I was in that.
Was any other social worker part of this group?
I think so. I'd have to really get out the newspaper sheet and look. The one person I remember was Sister Scully from Chatham College at the same time. I'd have to get the clipping and look for you and see.
Most people would have the whole thing memorized. You carry your honors lightly.
I never quite figured out how that one got in.
It certainly had to be justly deserved.
It was very nice, but
like that is
non-plussing completely.
Everyone likes to be appreciated. You've done a lot of work, and I'm sure it was satisfying and gratifying. Was there an awards dinner, or how was this given publicity?
Just in a newspaper page. That's all. Mm-hmm. Somebody had called me, and asked a lot of questions from the newspaper, gave it no thought. When this thing came out, and it really popped. I had no idea this was what was coming.
So you've really reached the zenith of your profession.
Oh, I don't think anybody ever does that.
Well, from the inside, I know that's true, but from the outside, you have. I would say so.
It's been nice to be recognized. I was very pleased about the Carnegie Mellon, the alumni award. And at the time I got that, this was, I think there were 16 people who received it. Now the numbers have grown tremendously. But that was another nice surprise, a very nice one. Particularly when you know that I was not trained at Carnegie Mellon for what I'm doing, Carnegie Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And this surprised everybody from the library school. If I get an award like this, I don't know how that one came about.
There's a third award mentioned. Will you talk about that?
Oh, the Gardner Award from the County Medical Society. Mm-hmm. Yes, that was also a very nice one. That was the first award that was given to a lay person for health activities in the community. This was the Harold B. Gardner Award. That was done with much fanfare. This was at a big dinner at the annual meeting of the County Medical Society. And it was really very nice, and I was very much touched at that, because in the presentation of that award, the presenter was a man who had been taught in medical school by my oldest brother, and who had a very warm feeling for him, and mentioned this in the award, and also mentioned my younger brother. And neither of them, of course, with any connection with ophthalmology, prevention of blindness, anything that I was interested in. One was a pathologist, the other is an obstetrician gynecologist. It was a very meaningful evening to me.
Oh, of course. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you could live your life again. If there was any other direction you would take besides me. there's something else. I wish I had educated myself this way or gone in this direction.
I can't think of anything else I would rather have done. I probably would say that I would have wished that I'd been trained in social work when I was at Carnegie Tech. I think I told you originally that I wanted a general education.
Yeah.
I'm one of seven children, six of whom graduated from Pitt, went to Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Carnegie Mellon because I was educated during the Depression.